leaning up against the wall, while she sat in front of him, his legs apart and his arms holding her. She rested her head on his chest and sighed.
"For the last few weeks, I've done everything she's asked. Vasilisa, please show this stupid visiting royal around campus. Vasilisa, please jump on a plane for the weekend so that I can introduce you to some boring officials here at court. Vasilisa, please put in some volunteer time with the younger students. It looks good."
Despite Lissa's frustration, I couldn't help a little amusement. She had Queen Tatiana's voice down perfectly. "You would have done that last one willingly," Christian pointed out.
"Yeah, the point being willingly. I hate her trying to dictate every part of my life lately."
Christian leaned over and kissed her cheek. "Like I said, you made a deal with the devil. You're her darling now. She wants to make sure you're making her look good." Lissa scowled. Although Maroi lived inside human-run countries and were subject to those governments, they were also ruled by a king or queen who came from one of the 12 royal Maroi families. Queen Tatiana, an Ivashkov, was the current ruler, and she'd taken a particular interest in Lissa as the last living member of the Dragomir family. As such, Tatiana had cut Lissa a deal. If Lissa lived at court after graduating from St. Vladimir's, the queen would arrange for her to attend Lehigh University in Pennsylvania. Lissa was a total brain and thought living in Tatiana's household would be worth it to attend a semi-big, prestigious university, as opposed to the tiny ones Maroi usually went to, for safety reasons. As Lissa was finding out, though, the strings attached to that deal were already in place now.
"And I just sit and take it," Lissa said. "I just smile and say, 'Yes, Your Majesty, anything you want, Your Majesty.'"
"Then tell her the deal's off. You'll be 18 in a couple of months. Royal or not, you're under no obligations. You don't need her to go to a big school. We'll just take off, you and me. Go to whatever college you want, or don't go to college at all. We can run off to Paris or something and work at a little cafe. Or sell bad art on the streets."
This actually made Lissa laugh, and she snuggled closer to Christian.
"Right. I can totally see you having the patience to wait on people. You'd be fired your first day. Looks like the only way we'll survive is if I go to college and support us."
"There are other ways to get to college, you know."
"Yeah, but not to any that are this good," she said wistfully. "Not easily, at least. This is the only way. I just wish I could have all this and stand up to her a little. Rose would."
"Rose would have gotten herself arrested for treason the first time Tatiana asked her to do something."
Lissa smiled sadly.
"Yeah, she would have."
The smile turned into a sigh.
"I miss her so much."
Christian kissed her again.
"I know."
This was a familiar conversation for them, one that never grew old because Lissa's feelings for me never faded.
"She's okay, you know. Wherever she is, she's okay."
Lissa stared off into the attic's darkness. The only light came from a stained glass window that made the whole place look like a fairyland.
The space had been recently cleaned out.
By Dimitri and me, actually. It had only been a couple of months ago, but already dust and boxes were accumulating once more. The priest here was a nice guy, but kind of a pack rat. Lissa noticed none of this, though. Her thoughts were too focused on me.
"I hope so. I wish I had some idea. Any idea where she is. I keep thinking that if anything happened to her, if she..."
Lissa couldn't finish the thought.
"Well, I keep thinking that I'd know somehow, that I'd feel it. I mean, I know the bond's one way. That's never changed, but I'd have to know if something happened to her, right?"
"I don't know," said Christian. "Maybe. Maybe not."
Any other guy would have said something overly sweet and comforting, assuring her that yes, of course she'd know. But it was part of Christian's nature to be brutally honest. Lissa liked that about him. So did I. It didn't always make him a pleasant friend, but at least you knew he wasn't bullshitting you. She sighed again.
"Adrian says she's okay. He visits her dreams. I'd give anything to be able to do that. My healing's getting better and better, and I've got the aura thing down, but no dreams yet."
Knowing Lissa missed me hurt almost more than if she'd completely written me off. I'd never wanted to hurt her. Even when I'd resented her for feeling like she was controlling my life, I'd never hated her. I loved her like a sister, and couldn't stand the thought of her suffering now on my behalf. How had things gotten so screwed up between us? She and Christian continued sitting there in comfortable silence, drawing strength and love from each other. They had what Dimitri and I had had, a sense of such oneness and familiarity that words often weren't needed. He ran his fingers through her hair, and while I couldn't see it so well through her own eyes, I could imagine the way that pale hair would gleam in the rainbow light of the stained glass windows. He tucked several long locks behind her ear and then tipped her head back, bringing his lips down to hers. The kiss started off light and sweet and then slowly intensified, warmth spreading from his mouth to hers.
Uh-oh, I thought. It might be time to take off after all.
But she ended it before I had to. It's time, she said regretfully. We've got to go. The look in Christian's crystal blue eyes said otherwise.
Maybe this is the perfect time for you to stand up to the queen. You should just stay here. It'd be a great way to build character.
Lissa lightly elbowed him and then planted a kiss on his forehead before standing up.
That is not why you want me to stay, so don't even try to play me.
They left the chapel, and Christian mumbled something about wanting to do more than play that earned him another elbow. They were heading toward the administration building, which was in the heart of the upper school's campus. Aside from the first blushes of spring, everything looked like it had when I left, at least on the outside. The stone buildings remained grand and imposing. The tall, ancient trees continued their watch. Yet, inside the hearts of the staff and students, things had changed. Everyone carried scars from the attack. Many of our people had been killed, and while classes were up and running again, everyone still grieved. Lissa and Christian reached their destination, the administration building. She didn't know the reason for her summoning, only that Tatiana had wanted her to meet some royal guy who had just arrived at the academy. Considering how many people Tatiana was always forcing her to meet lately, Lissa didn't think too much of it. She and Christian stepped inside the main office, where they found Headmistress Kirova sitting and chatting with an older Maroi and a girl about our age.
Ah, Miss Dragomir, there you are.
I'd gotten in trouble with Kirova a lot while I'd been a student, yet seeing her now made me feel kind of nostalgic. Getting suspended for starting a fight in class seemed worlds better than traipsing through Siberia to find Dimitri. Kirova had the same bird-like appearance she'd always had, the same glasses balanced at the end of her nose. The man and girl stood up, and Kirova gestured to them.
This is Eugene Lazar and his daughter Avery.
Kirova turned back toward Lissa.
This is Vasilisa Dragomir and Christian Ozera.
A fair bit of sizing up went on then. Lazar was a royal name, but that was no surprise since Tatiana had initiated this meeting. Mr. Lazar gave Lissa a winning smile as he shook her hand. He seemed a bit surprised to meet Christian, but the smile stayed. Of course, that kind of reaction to Christian wasn't so unusual. The two ways to become Strigoi were by choice or by force. A Strigoi could turn another person, human, Maroi, or Dampier, by drinking their blood and then feeding Strigoi blood back to them. That was what had happened to Dimitri. The other way to become Strigoi was unique to Maroi, and it was done by choice. Maroi who purposely chose to kill a person by drinking blood would also turn Strigoi. Usually, Maroi only drank small, non-lethal amounts from willing humans. But taking so much that it destroyed another's life force? Well, that turned Maroi to the dark side, taking away their elemental magic and transforming them into the twisted undead. That was exactly what Christian's parents had done. They'd willingly killed and become Strigoi to gain eternal life. Christian had never shown any desire to become Strigoi, but everyone acted as though he were about to. Admittedly, his snarky attitude didn't always help. A lot of his close family, despite being royal, had been unfairly shunned as well. He and I had teamed up to kick a fair amount of Strigoi ass during the attack, though. Word of that was getting around and improving his reputation. Kirova was never one to waste time with formalities, so she got straight to the point.
Mr. Lazar is going to be the new headmaster here.
Lissa had still been smiling at him politely, but her head immediately jerked toward Kirova.
What?
I'm going to be stepping down, explained Kirova, voice flat and emotionless enough to rival any guardian's. Though I'll still be serving the school as a teacher. You're going to teach? Christian asked incredulously. She gave him a dry look. Yes, Mr. Ozera. It was what I originally went to school for. I'm sure if I try hard enough, I can remember how to do it.
But why? Asked Lyssa. You do a great job.
It was more or less true, despite my disputes with Kirova. Usually over me breaking rules, I still had a healthy respect for her. Lyssa did too.
It's something I've thought about returning to for some time, explained Kirova. Now seemed as good a time as any, and Mr. Lazar is a very capable administrator.
Lyssa was pretty good at reading people. I think it was part of Spirit's side effects, along with how Spirit made its users very, very charismatic. Lyssa thought Kirova was lying, and so did I. If I'd been able to read Christian's mind, my guess would have been that he felt the same way. The attack on the Academy had sent a lot of people into a panic, royals in particular, even though the problem that had led to the attack had long since been fixed. I was guessing that Tatiana's hand was at work here, forcing Kirova to step down and have a royal take her place, thus making other royals feel better. Lyssa didn't let her thoughts show, and she turned back to Mr. Lazar.
Well, it's very nice to meet you. I'm sure you'll do a great job. Let me know if there's anything I can do for you.
She was playing the proper princess role perfectly. Being polite and sweet was one of her many talents.
Actually, said Mr. Lazar, there is.
He had a deep, booming voice, the kind that filled a room. He gestured toward his daughter.
I was wondering if you could show Avery around and help her find her way here. She graduated last year, but will be assisting me in my duties. I'm sure she'd much rather be spending time with someone her own age, however.
Avery smiled, and for the first time, Lyssa really paid attention to her. Avery was beautiful. Stunning. Lyssa was beautiful, too, between that gorgeous hair and the jade-green eyes that ran in her family. I thought she was 100 times prettier than Avery, but beside the older girl, Lyssa felt kind of plain. Avery was tall and slim like most Moroi, but had a few sexy curves thrown in. That kind of chest, like mine, was coveted among Moroi, and her long brown hair and blue-gray eyes completed the package.
I promise not to be too much of a pain, said Avery. And if you want, I'll give you some insider's tips on court life. I hear you're going to be moving there.
Instantly, Lyssa's defenses went up. She realized what was going on. Not only had Tatiana ousted Kirova, she'd sent a keeper for Lyssa. A beautiful, perfect companion who could spy on Lyssa and attempt to train her up to Tatiana's standards. Lyssa's words were perfectly polite when she spoke, but there was a definite edge of frost in her voice.
That'd be great, she said. I'm pretty busy lately, but we can try to make the time.
Neither Avery's father nor Kirova seemed to notice the back-off subtext, but something flashed in Avery's eyes that told Lyssa the message had come through.
Thanks, said Avery.
Unless I was mistaken, there was some legitimate hurt in her face.
I'm sure we'll figure something out.
Good, good, said Mr. Lazar, totally oblivious to the girl drama. Maybe you can show Avery to guest housing? She's staying in the East Wing.
Sure, said Lyssa, wishing she could do anything but that. She, Christian, and Avery started to leave, but just then, two guys entered the room. One was a Moroi, a little younger than us, and the other was a Dampier in his 20s, a guardian from the look of his hard, serious features.
Ah, there you are,
said Mr. Lazar, beckoning the guys in. He rested his hand on the boy's shoulder.
This is my son, Reed. He's a junior and will be attending classes here. He's very excited about it.
Actually, Reed looked extremely unexcited. He was pretty much the surliest guy I'd ever seen. If I ever needed to play the role of a disgruntled teen, I could have learned everything there was to know about it from Reed Lazar. He had the same good looks and features as Avery, but they were marred by a grimace that seemed permanently attached to his face. Mr. Lazar introduced the others to Reed. Reed's only response was a guttural, "Hey."
"And this is Simon, Avery's guardian," continued Mr. Lazar. "Of course, while on campus, he doesn't need to be with her all the time. You know how it goes. Still, I'm sure you'll see him around."
I hoped not. He didn't look as completely unpleasant as Reed, but he had a certain dour nature that seemed extreme even among guardians. Suddenly, I kind of felt sorry for Avery. If this was her only company, I'd want to befriend someone like Lyssa pretty badly. Lyssa, however, made it clear that she wouldn't be part of Tatiana's schemes. With little conversation, she and Christian escorted Avery to guest housing and promptly left. Normally, Lyssa would have stayed to help Avery get settled and offered to eat with her later. Not this time. Not with ulterior motives afoot. I came back to my own body, back in the hotel. I knew I shouldn't care about Academy life anymore and that I should even feel bad for Avery. Yet lying there and staring into the darkness, I couldn't help but take some smug, and yes, very selfish, satisfaction out of this encounter. Lyssa wouldn't be shopping for a new best friend anytime soon. Chapter 4. At any other time in my life, I would have loved exploring Moscow. Sydney had planned our trip so that when our train arrived there, we'd have a few hours before we had to board the next one to Siberia. This gave us some time to wander around and grab dinner, though she wanted to make sure we were safely inside the station before it grew too dark out. Despite my badass claims or my Molniya marks, she didn't want to take any chances. It made no difference to me how we spent our downtime. So long as I was getting closer to Dimitri, that was all that mattered. So Sydney and I walked aimlessly, taking in the sights and saying very little. I had never been to Moscow. It was a beautiful city, thriving and full of people and commerce. I could have spent days there just shopping and trying out the restaurants. Places I'd heard about all my life. The Kremlin, Red Square, the Bolshoi Theater were all at my fingertips. Despite how cool it all was, I actually tried to tune out the city's sights and sounds after a while because it reminded me of, well, Dimitri. He used to talk to me about Russia all the time and had sworn up and down that I'd love it here. "To you, it'd be like a fairy tale," he told me once. It was during a before-school practice late last autumn, just before the first snowfall. The air had been misty and dew-coated everything. "Sorry, comrade," I'd replied, reaching back to tie my hair into a ponytail. Dimitri had always loved my hair down, but in combat practice, long hair was a total liability. Borg and out-of-date music aren't part of any happy ending I've ever imagined. He'd given me one of his rare, easy grins then, the kind that just slightly crinkled up the corners of his eyes.
"Borscht, not Borg. And I've seen your appetite. If you were hungry enough, you did it."
So starvation's necessary for this fairy tale to work out? There was nothing I loved more than teasing Dimitri. Well, aside from maybe kissing him.
"I'm talking about the land. The buildings. Go to one of the big cities, it's like nothing you've ever seen. Everyone in the U.S. tends to build the same, always in big, chunky blocks. They do what's fast and easy, but in Russia, there are buildings that are like pieces of art. They are art. Even a lot of the ordinary, everyday buildings. In places like the Winter Palace, and Troisky Church in St. Petersburg, those will take your breath away."
His face had been aglow with a memory of sights he'd seen, that joy making his already handsome features divine. I think he could have named landmarks all day. My heart had burned within me, just from watching him. And then, just like I always did when I worried I might turn sappy or sentimental, I made a joke to shift the attention away and hide my emotions. It had switched him back into business mode, and we'd gotten to work. Now, walking the city streets with Sydney, I wished I could take back that joke and listen to Dimitri talk more about his homeland. I would have given anything to have Dimitri with me here, the way he used to be. He'd been right about the buildings. Sure, most were blocky copies of anything you'd find in the U.S. or anywhere else in the world, but some were exquisite, painted with bright colors, adorned with their strange yet beautiful onion-shaped domes. At times, it really did seem like something from another world. And all the while, I kept thinking that it should have been Dimitri here by my side, pointing things out and explaining them to me. We should have been having a romantic getaway. Dimitri and I could have eaten at exotic restaurants and then gone dancing at night. I could have worn one of the designer dresses I'd had to leave behind in the St. Petersburg Hotel. That's how it was supposed to be. It wasn't supposed to be me with a glowering human.
"Unreal, huh? like something from a story.
Sydney's voice startled me, and I realized we'd come to a stop in front of our train station.
There were a number of them in Moscow.
Her echoing of my conversation with Dmitri sent chills down my spine, largely because she was right. The station didn't have the onion domes, but still looked like something straight out of a storybook, like a cross between Cinderella's castle and a gingerbread house. It had a big arched roof and towers on either end. Its white walls were interspersed with patches of brown brick and green mosaic, almost making it look striped. In the U.S., some might have called it gaudy. To me, it was beautiful. I felt tears start to spring to my eyes as I wondered what Dmitri would have said about this building. He probably would have loved it just as he loved everything else here. Realizing that Sydney was waiting for a response, I swallowed back my grief and played flippant teenager.
Maybe something from a story about a train station.
She arched an eyebrow, surprised at my indifference, but she didn't question it. Who could say? Maybe if I kept up the sarcasm, she'd eventually get annoyed and ditch me. Somehow, I doubted I'd be that lucky. I was pretty sure her fear of her superiors trumped any other feelings she might have in regard to me. We had first-class train accommodations, which turned out to be a lot smaller than I expected. There was a combination bed/sitting bench on each side, a window, and a TV high on the wall. I suppose that would help pass the time, but I often had trouble following Russian television, not just because of the language, but also because some of the shows were downright bizarre. Still, Sydney and I would each have our own space, even if the room was cozier than we would have liked. The colors reminded me a lot of the same fanciful patterns I'd seen throughout the cities. Even the hall outside our cabin was brightly colored, with plush carpet in red and yellow designs and a teal and yellow runner going down the middle. Inside our room, the benches were covered in cushions with rich orange velvet, and the curtains matched in shades of gold and peach, made of thick, heavy fabric embossed with a silky pattern. Between all that and the ornate table in the middle of the cabin, it was almost like traveling in a mini palace. It was dark out by the time the train left the station. For whatever reason, the Trans-Siberian always left Moscow at night. It wasn't that late yet, but Sydney said she wanted to sleep, and I didn't want to make her more irate than she already was. So we turned off all the lights, save for a tiny reading lamp by my bed. I'd bought a magazine at the train station, and even if I couldn't understand the language, pictures of makeup and clothes transcended all cultural barriers. I flipped through the pages as quietly as I could, admiring summer tops and dresses and wondering when, if ever, I'd be able to start worrying about that kind of thing again. I wasn't tired when I lay down, but sleep took me nonetheless. I was dreaming about water skiing, when suddenly the waves and sun around me dissolved into a room lined with shelves and shelves of books. Tables with state-of-the-art computers lined the room, and there was a calmness that permeated the place. I was in the library at St. Vladimir's Academy. I groaned. Oh, come on, not today.
Why not today? Why not every day?
I turned and found myself looking into the handsome face of Adrian Ivashkov. Adrian was a Moroi, the Queen's great-nephew, and someone I'd left behind in my old life when I took off on this suicide mission. He had beautiful emerald green eyes that made most girls swoon, particularly since they were paired with stylishly messy brown hair. He was also kind of in love with me, and the reason I had so much money on this trip. I'd sweet-talked him out of it.
True, I admitted. I suppose I should be grateful you only show up about once a week.
He grinned and sat down backward in one of the slatted wooden chairs. He was tall, like most Moroi, with a leanly muscled build. Moroi guys never got too bulky.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder, Rose. Don't want you to take me for granted.
We're in no danger of that. Don't worry.
I don't suppose you're going to tell me where you are.
Nope. Aside from Lyssa, Adrian was the only other known living spirit user, and among his talents was the ability to show up in my dreams, often uninvited, and talk to me. I took it as a blessing that his powers never actually let him know where I was.
You kill me, Rose, he said melodramatically. Every day is agony without you. Empty, alone, I pine for you, wondering if you're even still alive.
He spoke in an exaggerated, silly sort of way that was characteristic of him. Adrian rarely took things seriously and always had a flippant edge. Spirit also had a tendency to make people unstable, and while he fought it, he wasn't unaffected. Underneath that melodrama, though, I sensed a kernel of truth. No matter how shallow an appearance he gave off, he really did care about me. I crossed my arms. Well, I'm still alive, clearly, so I guess you can let me go back to sleep.
How many times have I told you? You are asleep.
And yet I inexplicably feel exhausted talking to you. This made him laugh.
Oh, I do so miss you.
That smile faded. She misses you too. I stiffened. She. He didn't even need to say her name. There was no question as to whom he was talking about. Lyssa. Even saying her name in my mind caused me pain, particularly after seeing her last night. Choosing between Lyssa and Dimitri had been the hardest decision of my life, and time passing hadn't made it any easier. I might have chosen him, but being away from her was like having an arm cut off, particularly because the bond ensured we were never truly apart. Adrian gave me a canny look, like he could guess my thoughts. Do you go see her? No, I said, refusing to acknowledge that I'd just seen her last night. Let him think I was truly free of all that. That's not my life anymore.
Right. Your life is all about dangerous vigilante missions.
You wouldn't understand anything that isn't drinking, smoking, or womanizing. He shook his head. You're the only one I want, Rose. Unfortunately, I believed him. It would have been easier for both of us if he could find someone else. Well, you can keep feeling that way, but you're going to have to keep waiting. Much longer? He asked me this all the time, and every time I emphasized how long it would be and how he was wasting his time. Thinking of Sydney's possible lead, I hesitated tonight. I don't know. Hope blossomed on Adrian's face.
That's the most optimistic thing you've told me so far. Don't read too much into it.
I don't know, could be one day or one year. Or never. His mischievous grin returned, and even I had to admit it was cute.
I'm going to hope it's one day.
Thinking of Sydney brought a question to my mind. Hey, have you ever heard of the Alchemists?
Sure,
he said. Typical. Of course you have. Why, did you run into them?
Kind of. What did you do?
Why do you think I did anything? He laughed.
Alchemists only show up when trouble happens, and you bring trouble wherever you go.
Be careful, though. They're religious nuts.
That's kind of extreme, I said.
Sydney's faith didn't seem to be anything bad.
Just don't let them convert you,
he winked.
I like you being the sinner you are.
I started to tell him that Sydney probably thought I was beyond all salvation, but he ended the dream, sending me back to sleep. Except, instead of returning to my own dreams, I woke up. Around me, the train hummed comfortingly as we sped through the rushing countryside. My reading lamp was still on, its light too bright for my sleepy eyes. I reached over to turn it off and noticed then that Sydney's bed was empty. Probably in the bathroom, I thought. Yet, I felt uneasy. She and her group of alchemists were still mysteries, and I suddenly worried that she might have some sinister plan going on. Was she off meeting with some covert operative? I decided to find her. Admittedly, I had no idea where she could be on a train of this size, but logic had never really deterred me before. No reason they should now. Thankfully, after slipping on my shoes and stepping out in the hall adjacent to our cabin, I discovered I didn't have to look very far. The corridor was lined with windows, all draped in those rich curtains, and Sydney stood with her back to me, gazing outside, a blanket wrapped around her. Her hair was messy from sleep and looked less gold in the poor lighting. Hey, I began hesitantly. Are you okay? She turned slightly toward me. One hand held the blanket, the other played with the cross around her neck. I remembered Adrian's comments about religion. I can't sleep, she said bluntly. Is it because of me? Her only answer was to turn back to the window. Look, I said, feeling helpless. If there's anything I can do, I mean, aside from going back and canceling this trip.
I'll handle it, she said, This is just, well, it's really strange for me. I deal with you guys all the time, but I don't actually deal with you, you know? We could probably get you a room of your own, if that would help. We can find an attendant, and I've got the money. She shook her head. It's just a couple of days, if that. I didn't know what else to say. Having Sydney along was inconvenient in the grand scheme of my plans, but I didn't want her to suffer. Watching her play with the cross, I tried to think of something comforting to tell her. Bonding over our views of God might have been a way to get closer, but somehow I didn't think telling her how I had daily battles with God and doubted his existence lately would really help me out with the whole evil creature of the night reputation. Okay, I said at last. Let me know if you change your mind. I returned to my bed and fell asleep surprisingly fast, despite worrying that Sydney would be standing in the hall all night. Yet, when I woke in the morning, she was curled up on her bed, fast asleep. Apparently, her exhaustion had been so strong that even fear of me had driven her to rest. I got up quietly and changed out of the t-shirt and sweatpants I'd gone to bed in. I was hungry for breakfast and figured Sydney might sleep longer if I wasn't around. The restaurant was in the next car over and looked like something out of an old movie. Elegant burgundy linens draped the tables in brass and dark wood, along with bits of bright-colored stained glass art, gave the whole place an antique feel. It looked more like a restaurant I'd find on the streets of St. Petersburg than a train dining car. I ordered something that reminded me vaguely of French toast, except that it had cheese on it. It came with sausage, which thus far seemed to be the same everywhere I went. I was just about finished when Sydney wandered in. When I'd met her that first night, I'd assumed her dress pants and blouse had been for the sake of the nightingale. I was discovering, however, that that was her normal style. She struck me as one of those people who didn't own jeans or t-shirts. She'd been mussed while standing in the hall last night, but now she was in neat black slacks and a dark green sweater. I was in jeans and a long-sleeved gray thermal shirt and felt kind of sloppy beside her. Her hair was brushed and styled, but had a slightly messy look that I suspected never went away, no matter how hard she tried. At least I had my sleek ponytail going for me today. She slid across from me and ordered an omelet when the server came by, again speaking in Russian. "How do you know that?" I asked. "What, Russian?" she shrugged. "I had to learn it growing up, and a few other languages." "Wow." I had taken intros to a couple of languages, too, and performed miserably in all of them. I hadn't thought much of it at the time, but now, because of this trip and because of Dmitri, I really wished I'd learned Russian. I supposed it wasn't too late, and I had picked up a few phrases in my time here, but still, it was a daunting task. "You must have to learn a lot of stuff for this job," I mused, pondering what it must mean to be part of a secret group that crossed international lines and interacted with all sorts of governments. Something else crossed my mind. "And what about that stuff you used on the Strigoi? That disintegrated the body?" She smiled. "Almost." "Well, I told you the alchemists started off as a group of people trying to make potions, right? That's a chemical we developed to get rid of Strigoi bodies fast." "Could you use it to actually kill one?" I asked. "Dousing a Strigoi in some dissolving liquid would be a lot easier than the usual ways. Decapitation, staking, or burning." "Afraid not. Only works on corpses." "Bummer," I said. I wondered if she had other potions up her sleeve, but figured I should ration my amount of Sydney questions for the day. "What are we going to do when we get to Omsk?" "Omsk," she corrected. "We'll get a car and drive the rest of the way." "Have you been there? To this village?" She nodded. "Once." "What's it like?" I asked, surprised to hear a wistful note in my own voice. Aside from my quest to find Dmitri, there was a piece of me that just wanted to cling to everything I could of him. I wanted to know everything about him that I hadn't known before. If the school had given me his possessions, I would have slept with them each night. His room had been cleared out pretty quickly, though. Now I could only gather what pieces of him I could, as though hoarding these bits of information would keep him with me somehow. "It's like any other Dompierre town, I guess. I've never been to one." The server set Sydney's omelet down, and she paused with her fork in the air. "Really? I thought all of you... well, I don't know."
I shook my head. I've been at the academy my whole life, more or less. My 2-year stint among humans wasn't really relevant. Sydney chewed thoughtfully. I was willing to wager she wouldn't finish the omelet. From what I'd seen that first night, and while waiting for trains yesterday, she hardly seemed to eat anything. It was like she subsisted on air alone. Maybe it was another alchemist thing. Most likely, it was just a Sydney thing. The town is half human and half Dampier, but the Dampiers blend in. They have a whole underground society that the humans are completely oblivious to. I'd always figured there was a whole subculture going on, but I had no idea how it would fit into the rest of the town. And? I asked. What's that subculture like? She set her fork down. Let's just say you'd better brace yourself. Chapter 5. The rest of the trip passed uneventfully. Sydney never entirely lost that discomfort she seemed to have around me. But sometimes, while I was trying to figure out Russian television, she'd take the time to explain what was going on. There were some cultural differences between these shows and the ones we'd both grown up with, so we had that in common. Every once in a while, she'd crack a smile over something we'd both found funny, and I'd sense there was someone in there I could possibly be friends with. I knew there was no way I'd ever find a replacement for Lyssa, but I think some part of me still longed to fill the void of friendship that had been opened up when I left her behind. Sydney napped throughout the day, and I began to think she was just an insomniac with bizarre sleep patterns. She also continued her equally odd treatment of food, hardly touching her meals. She always let me have the leftovers and was a bit more adventurous with Russian cuisine. I'd had to experiment when I first arrived, and it was nice to have the guidance of someone who, though not a local, knew a lot more about this country than me. On the third day of our trip, we arrived in Omsk. Omsk was a larger and prettier city than I'd expected of Siberia. Dmitri had always teased me that my images of Siberia looking like Antarctica were wrong, and I could tell that he was right, at least as far as the southern part of the region was concerned. The weather wasn't much different from what I'd have found in Montana this time of year. Cool spring air occasionally warmed by sunshine. Sydney had told me when we got there, she'd get us a ride from some Roy she knew. Several lived in the city, blending in with the large population. Yet as the day went on, we discovered a problem. No Maroy would take us to the village. Apparently the road was dangerous. Strigoi often hung out near it at night, hoping to catch traveling Maroy or Dampiers. The more Sydney explained it, the more worried I became about my plan. Apparently, there weren't many Strigoi in Dmitri's town itself. According to her, they lurked on the town's periphery, but few lived out there permanently. If that was the case, my odds of finding Dmitri had dropped. Things got even worse as Sydney continued describing the situation. A lot of Strigoi travel the country looking for victims, and the village is just an area they pass through, she explained. The road is kind of remote, so some Strigoi will stay for a while and try to get easy prey. Then they move on. In the U.S., Strigoi often hide in large cities, I said uneasily. They do that here, too. It's easier for them to take victims without being noticed. Yes, this definitely threw a wrench into my plans. If Dmitri wasn't residing in this town, I was going to have some serious problems. I'd known Strigoi liked big cities, but somehow I'd convinced myself Dmitri would return to the place where he grew up. But if Dmitri wasn't there... Well, suddenly the enormity of Siberia hit me. I'd learned Omsk wasn't even the biggest city in the region, and finding even one Strigoi here could be hard. Looking for him in any number of cities that might be larger, things could get very, very ugly if my hunch proved wrong. Since setting out to find Dmitri, I'd occasionally had weak moments in which I half hoped I'd never find him. The idea of him as a Strigoi still tormented me. I was also visited by other images. Images of the way he'd been and memories of the time we'd spent together. I think my most precious memory was of just before he was turned. It was one of those times when I'd sucked up a lot of the spirit-induced darkness from Lyssa. I'd been out of control, unable to get a grip. I was afraid of becoming a monster, afraid of killing myself like another shadow-kissed guardian had. Dmitri had brought me back to myself, lending me his strength. I'd realize then just how strong our connection was, how perfectly we understood each other. I'd been skeptical about people being soulmates in the past, but at that moment, I knew it was true. And with that emotional connection had come a physical one. Dimitri and I had finally given in to the attraction. We'd sworn we never would, but, well, our feelings were just too strong. Staying away from each other had turned out to be impossible. We'd had sex, and it had been my first time ever. Sometimes I felt certain it would be my only time. The act itself had been amazing, and I'd been unable to separate the physical joy from the emotional. Afterward, we'd lain together in that small cabin for as long as we dared, and that had been amazing too. It had been one of the few moments where I'd felt he was truly mine. "Do you remember Victor's lust charm?" I had asked, snuggling closer against him. Dimitri looked at me like I was crazy. "Of course." Victor Dashkov was a royal Moroi, one who had been friends with Lyssa and her family. Little did we know that he'd secretly studied spirit for years and had identified Lyssa as a spirit user before she even knew. He tortured her with all sorts of mind games that truly made her think she was going crazy. His schemes had fully culminated in his kidnapping and torturing her until she healed the disease that was killing him. Victor was now in prison for life, both for what he'd done to Lyssa and because of his treasonous plans for rebellion against the Moroi government. He had been one of the few to know about my relationship with Dimitri, something that had worried me to no end. He'd even furthered our relationship by creating a lust charm, a necklace infused with earth and compulsion. The charm was full of dangerous magic that had made Dimitri and me give in to our most basic instincts. We had pulled back at the last moment, and until our night in the cabin, I had believed our charm-induced encounter to be the ultimate physical high. I didn't realize it could get better, I had told Dimitri after we'd actually slept together. I felt a little shy talking about it. I thought about it all the time. What happened between us? He turned to me, tugging the covers up. The cabin was cold, but its bed had warm blankets. I suppose we could have put clothes on, but that was the last thing I wanted to do. Being pressed skin to skin felt too good.
I did too.
You did? I asked, surprised. I thought you were too disciplined for that. I thought you'd try to forget it. Dimitri laughed and kissed my neck.
Gross. How could I forget being naked with someone as beautiful as you? I stayed awake so many nights, replaying every detail. I told myself over and over that it was wrong, but you're impossible to forget.
His lips moved to my collarbone, and his hand stroked my hip.
You're burned into my mind forever. There is nothing, nothing in this world that will ever change that.
And it was memories like that that made it so hard to comprehend this quest to kill him, even if he was a Strigoi. Yet, at the same time, it was exactly because of memories like that that I had to destroy him. I needed to remember him as the man who'd loved me and held me in bed. I needed to remember that that man would not want to stay a monster. I wasn't very excited when Sydney showed me the car she'd bought, particularly since I'd given her the money for it.
"We're going in that?" I exclaimed. "Can it even make it that far?"
The trip was apparently 7 hours. She gave me a shocked look.
"Are you serious? Do you know what this is? It's a 1972 Citroën. These things are amazing. Do you have any idea how hard it would have been to get this into the country back in the Soviet days? I can't believe that guy actually sold it. He's clueless."
I knew little about the Soviet era, and even less about classic cars, but Sydney stroked the shiny red hood like she was in love. Who would have guessed? She was a car geek. Maybe it was valuable and I just couldn't appreciate it. I was more into sleek, brand new sports cars. To be fair, this car didn't have any dents or rust, and aside from an outdated look, it appeared clean and well cared for.
"Will it run?" I asked.
If possible, her expression grew even more incredulous.
"Of course!"
And it did. The engine sprang to life with a steady hum, and with the way it accelerated, I started to understand her fascination. She wanted to drive, and I was about to argue that it had been my money that bought it. Seeing the adoring look on her face, though, I finally decided not to come between her and the car. I was just glad we were leaving right away. It was already late afternoon. If the road was as dangerous as everyone claimed, we wouldn't want to be out there while it was dark. Sydney agreed but said we could get most of the trip in before sundown and then stay overnight at a place she knew. We'd arrive at our destination in the morning. The farther we drove from Omsk, the more remote the terrain became. As I studied it, I began to understand Dmitri's love of this land. It had a scrubby, barren look, true, but spring was turning the plains green, and there was something hauntingly beautiful about seeing all this untouched wilderness. It reminded me of Montana in some ways, yet had a certain quality that was all its own. I couldn't help but use Sydney's crush on the car as a means of conversation. "Do you know a lot about cars?" I asked.
"Some," she said. "My dad's the alchemist in our family, but my mom's a mechanic."
"Really?" I asked, surprised. "That's kind of unusual." Of course, I was hardly one to talk about gender roles. Considering my life was dedicated to fighting and killing, I couldn't really claim to have a traditionally feminine job either. "She's really good and taught me a lot. I wouldn't have minded doing that for a living. Wouldn't have minded going to college either." There was a bitter note in her voice. "I guess there are a lot of things I wish I could do." "Why can't you?" "I had to be the next family alchemist. My sister, well, she's older, and usually it's the oldest kid who has to do the job. But she's kind of worthless."
"That's harsh."
"Yeah, maybe, but she just couldn't handle this kind of thing. When it comes to organizing her lip gloss collection, she's unstoppable. But managing the kinds of networks and people we do? No, she'd never be able to do it. Dad said I was the only one capable of it."
"That's a compliment, at least."
"I guess." Sydney looked so sad now that I felt bad for bringing it up.
"If you could go to college, what would you study?"
"Greek and Roman architecture."
I decided then it was a good thing I wasn't behind the wheel because I probably would have driven off the road.
"Seriously? You know anything about it?"
No.
"It's amazing." The sad expression was replaced by one of wonder. She looked nearly as enamored as she'd been of the car.
I understood then why she'd liked the train station.
"The ingenuity it took for some of that? Well, it's just unreal. If the alchemists won't send me back to the U.S. after this, I'm hoping I'll get assigned to Greece or Italy."
"That would be cool."
"Yeah."
Her smile faded.
"But there are no guarantees you'll get what you want with this job." She fell silent after that, and I decided that coaxing her into this small conversation had been victory enough. I left her to her own thoughts of classic cars and architecture while my mind wandered to topics of my own. Strigoi, duty, Dmitri. Always Dmitri. Well, Dmitri and Lyssa. It was always a toss-up over who would cause me more pain. Today, as the car lulled me into a daze, it was Lyssa I went to, thanks largely to Adrian's recent visit in my dream. Early evening in Russia meant early morning in Montana. Of course, since the school ran on a nocturnal schedule, it was technically night for them too, in spite of the sunshine. It was nearly curfew, and everyone would have to return to their own dorm soon. Lyssa was with Adrian, over in his room in guest housing. Adrian, like Avery, had graduated, but as the only other known spirit user, he'd come to stay indefinitely at the school and work with Lyssa. They'd just spent a long, exhausting evening working on dream walking and sat on the floor facing each other. With a sigh, Lyssa collapsed back and lay down, stretching her arms over her head.
"This is useless," she groaned. "I'm never going to learn it."
"Never took you for a quitter, cousin."
Adrian's voice was as flippant as usual, but I could tell he was weary, too. They weren't really cousins. That was just a term royals sometimes used with each other.
"I just don't understand how you do it."
"I don't know how to explain it. I just think about it. And, well, it happens." He shrugged and pulled out the cigarettes he always carried. "Do you mind?"
"Yes,"
she said.
To my surprise, he put them away. What the hell? He'd never asked me if I minded if he smoked, which I did. In fact, half the time, I swore he did it to annoy me, which made no sense. Adrian was way past the age when guys tried to attract girls they liked by picking on them. He tried to explain the process.
I just think about who I want and sort of, I don't know, expand my mind toward them.
Lissa sat up and crossed her legs.
Sounds a lot like how Rose described reading me.
Probably the same principle. Look, it took you a while to learn auras. This is no different. And you're not the only one with a learning curve. I'm only now finally moving past healing scratches and you can bring back the dead, which, call me crazy, is kind of hardcore.
He paused.
Of course, some would argue that I am actually crazy.
At the mention of auras, she studied him and summoned the ability to see the field of light that shone around every living thing. His aura came into focus, surrounding him in a golden glow. According to Adrian, her aura was the same. No other Maroi had that kind of pure gold. Lissa and Adrian figured it was unique to spirit users. He smiled, guessing what she was doing.
How's it look?
The same.
See how good you are at it now. Just be patient with the dreams.
Lissa wanted so badly to walk dreams the same way he could. Despite her disappointment, I was glad she couldn't. Adrian's dream visits were hard enough on me. Seeing her would, well, I wasn't entirely sure, but it would make this cool, hard attitude I was trying to maintain in Russia a lot harder.
I just want to know how she is, said Lissa in a small voice. I can't stand not knowing.
It was the conversation with Christian all over again.
I saw her the other day. She's fine, and I'll go again soon.
Lissa nodded.
Do you think she'll do it? Do you think she can kill Dimitri?
Adrian took a long time in answering.
I think she can. The question will be if it kills her in the process.
Lissa flinched and I was a bit surprised. The answer was as blunt as one Christian might give.
God, I wish she hadn't decided to go after him.
Wishing's useless now. Rose has got to do this. It's the only way we can get her back.
He paused.
It's the only way she'll be able to move on.
Adrian surprised me sometimes, but this took the prize. Lissa thought it was foolish and suicidal to go after Dimitri. I knew Sydney would agree if I told her the truth about this trip. But Adrian? Silly, shallow, party boy Adrian understood? Studying him through Lissa's eyes, I realized he actually did. He didn't like it, and I could hear the hurt in his words. He cared about me. My having such strong feelings for someone else caused him pain. And yet, he truly believed that I was doing the right thing. The only thing I could do.
Lissa looked at the clock.
I've got to go before curfew. I should probably study for my history test, too.
Adrian grinned.
Studying's overrated. Just find someone smart to copy off.
She stood up.
Are you saying I'm not smart?
Hell no.
He rose also and went to pour himself a drink from the fully stocked bar he kept on hand. Self-medicating was his irresponsible way of keeping spirit's effects at bay. And if he'd been using spirit all night, he would want the numbness of his vices.
You're the smartest person I know, but that doesn't mean you have to do unnecessary work.
You can't succeed in life if you don't work. Copying from others won't get you anywhere.
Whatever, he said with a grin. I copied all through school and look how well I'm doing today.
With an eye roll, Lissa gave him a quick hug goodbye and left. Once out of his sight, her smile faded a bit. In fact, her thoughts took a decidedly dark turn. Mentioning me had stirred up all sorts of feelings within. She was worried about me, desperately worried. She told Christian that she felt bad about what had happened between us. But the full force of that didn't hit me until now. She was racked by guilt and confusion, continually berating herself for what she should have done. And above all, she missed me. She had that same feeling I did, like a part of her had been cut out. Adrian lived on the fourth floor, and Lissa opted for the stairs rather than the elevator. All the while, her mind spun with worry. Worries about whether she'd ever master spirit. Worry for me. Worry that she wasn't currently feeling spirit's dark side effects, which made her wonder if I was absorbing them, just as a guardian named Anna had. She'd lived centuries ago and was bonded to St. Vladimir, the school's namesake. She'd absorbed Spirit's nasty effects from him, and had been driven insane. On the second floor, Lissa could make out the sounds of shouting, even through the door that separated the stairwell from the hallway. Despite knowing it had nothing to do with her, she hesitated, curiosity getting the best of her. A moment later, she quietly pushed the door open and stepped into the hall. The voices were coming from around the corner. She carefully peered around it. Not that she needed to. She recognized the voices. Avery Lazar stood in the hallway, hands on her hips, as she stared at her father. He stood in the doorway to what must have been his suite. Their stances were rigid and hostile, and anger crackled between them.
"I'll do what I want," she yelled. "I'm not your slave."
"You're my daughter," he said in a voice both calm and condescending. "Though at times I wish you weren't."
Ouch. Both Lissa and I were shocked.
"Then why are you making me stay in this hellhole? Let me go back to court."
"And embarrass me further? We barely got out without damaging this family's reputation. Much. No way am I going to send you there alone and let you do God knows what."
"Then send me to Mom. Switzerland's got to be better than this place."
There was a pause.
"Your mother is busy."
"Oh, nice," said Avery, voice heavy with sarcasm. "That's a polite way of saying she doesn't want me. No surprise. I just interfere with her and that guy she's sleeping with."
"Avery!"
His voice rang out loud and angry. Lissa flinched and stepped back.
"This conversation is done. Get back to your room and sober up before someone sees you. I expect you at breakfast tomorrow, and I expect you to be respectable. We have some important visitors."
"Yeah, and God knows we've got to keep up appearances."
"Go to your room," he repeated, "before I call Simon and make him drag you there."
"Yes, sir," she simpered. "Right away, sir. Anything you say, sir."
And with that, he slammed the door. Lissa, ducking back behind the corner, could hardly believe he'd said those things to his own daughter. For a few moments, there was silence. Then, Lissa heard the sound of footsteps coming toward her. Avery suddenly rounded the corner and stopped in front of Lissa, giving us our first good look of her. Avery was wearing a tight, short dress made of some kind of blue fabric that shone silvery in the light. Her hair hung long and wild, and the tears pouring from her blue-gray eyes had destroyed the heavy makeup she wore. The scent of alcohol came through loud and clear. She hastily ran a hand over her eyes, obviously embarrassed at being seen like this.
"Well," she said flatly, "I guess you overheard our family drama."
Lissa felt equally embarrassed at being caught spying.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I was just passing by."
Avery gave a harsh laugh.
"Well, I don't think it matters. Probably everyone in the building heard us."
"I'm sorry," Lissa repeated.
"Don't be. You didn't do anything wrong."
"No, I mean, I'm sorry he, you know, said those things to you."
"It's part of being a good family. Everyone's got skeletons in their closet."
Avery crossed her arms and leaned against the wall. Even upset and messy, she was beautiful.
"God, I hate him sometimes. No offense, but this place is so fucking boring. I found some sophomore guys to hang with tonight, but they were pretty boring too. The only thing they had going for them was their beer."
Why did your dad bring you here?" Lissa asked. "Why aren't you, I don't know, in college?" Avery gave a harsh laugh.
"He doesn't trust me enough. When we were at court, I got involved with this cute guy who worked there. Total non-royal, of course. Dad freaked out and was afraid people would find out. So when he got the job here, he brought me along to keep an eye on me. And torture me. I think he's afraid I'll run off with a human if I go to college."
She sighed.
"I swear to God, if Reed wasn't here, I'd just run away. Period."
Lissa didn't say anything for a long time. She'd gone out of her way to avoid Avery diligently. With all the orders the Queen was giving Lissa lately, this seemed the only way Lissa could fight back and stop herself from being controlled. But now, she wondered if she'd been wrong about Avery. Avery didn't seem like a spy for Tatiana. She didn't seem like someone who wanted to mold Lyssa into a perfect royal. Mostly, Avery seemed like a sad, hurting girl whose life was spinning out of control.